Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Direct Line Group 2016 preliminary results presentation and conference call. I will now hand you over to Paul Geddes, CEO of Direct Line Group, to take you through the results. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our full year results, a week later than originally planned, thanks to the waiting for the Lord Chancellor's announcement, which I think, given events, was a good delay. Here you can see on the chart our 2016 highlights. Another successful year that demonstrated the benefits of our multi-year transformation program towards our mission to make insurance much easier and better value for customers. As a great retailer, we increased our competitiveness across distribution channels, increasing our own brand policy count by over 200,000 policies, having written the highest volume of new business since the IPO in a high shopping market. Motor premiums were up almost 9.4% in 2016, following a very strong year for our market-leading Direct Line brand, which I'm going to share in a lot more detail later. As a smart and efficient manufacturer, in 2016, we expanded our own repair network. We extended our home and private insurance partnership with RBS for a further 3 years, and we extended the Nationwide Travel partnership. We were also disciplined on costs, and through our efficiency improvements, offset additional levies, investment in the business, and funded new business growth. Finally, to lead and disrupt the market, we continued to grow our share of the direct commercial market, and we demonstrated our determination to stay at the forefront of new car technology with a series of new relationships, and I'll say more about these also later. All this enabled us to improve our underlying COR to 91.8%, which after adjusting for weather, was 93.5% towards the bottom of the  93%-95% range we set at the start of 2016. Post Ogden, the combined ratio was still comfortably below 100%. Return on tangible equity was 20.2% before adjusting for Ogden and 14.2% after. As a result of our strong balance sheet and prudent reserves, we delivered 5.4% growth in the final regular dividend. We did pay a special, to remind you, at the half year, and our capital position is strong at 165%, which is above the middle of our range. We've taken in our stride, we think, the challenges from IPT rises, the Ogden rate decision, flood re, sterling devaluation, to name a few, and we're now confident we can take any opportunities that result in the market in our stride. Over to John for some numbers.
Thanks, Paul, and good morning, everybody. We've decided to present you with both our reported figures and the underlying results pre the Ogden change, as we felt this would be more useful. In our statement last week, we outlined the one-off impact of moving to the new rate, which we believe doesn't affect our underlying position going forward. I'm going to cover the headline results first, and then I'll explain the specific Ogden impact. And then I'll talk to the business segments excluding Ogden, as I think that's more instructive as to our future prospects. I'll move back to capital, which clearly will reflect Ogden. And in the appendix, we've included the usual segmental P&Ls, again, both pre and post the Ogden adjustment. Hopefully, it's all transparent. Starting with the financial summary here, as Paul said, we think it's a strong set of results. We grew premiums by almost 4% in 2016, helped by particularly strong growth in motor. Pre-Ogden, ongoing operating profit was 578.6 million, 11% ahead of 2015. There are, of course, a number of moving parts, which I'll come on to later, but in summary, the biggest movement was a 70 million pound increase in underwriting profit, which reflects lower weather-related claims costs and higher prior year releases. This was offset by higher costs and commissions. Secondly, installments and other income increased to 168 million due to higher written volumes, while investment return was 27 million pounds lower than prior year on lower assets under management and fewer unrealized property gains. Ongoing COR of 91.8% was a couple of points better than 2015. Adjusted for weather, that would have been 93.5% in line with our guidance. Total costs were 924 million pounds in 2016. That's 39 million higher than prior year. It includes an additional 24 million pound flood re-levy and 39 million of non-cash impairments. We believe the underlying position is reasonably good, particularly in the context of our strong new business growth. At a segmental level, better weather in 2016 led to a significant increase in home and commercial profit, and that was partially offset by motor and rescue and other parcel lines. Here we come to Ogden, and I want to take a moment to explain the impact to our business from the reduction to the discount rate announced last week. In summary, we've booked a one-off hit of 270 million pounds in 2016, but we expect very small impact to our earnings going forward. This takes account of the change to the rate, which for us is from 1.5% to -0.75%, along with the estimated impact on PPO propensity. Our reinsurance was renewed at 1st of January, and we maintained cover at 1 million pounds, so our costs and coverage are protected during 2017. We continue to hold a significant margin above the ABE, having maintained our reserving strength post the Ogden change. I'll go through the P&L, the balance sheet, and solvency in that order for both 2016 and our expectations for 2017. 2016 is pretty straightforward. We took a charge of 217.3 million, of which 12.1 million related to the 2016 accident year. As for 2017, there are a few effects, but they're all small. The first one is we expect a small earn-through effect from business already written, but the impact should be smaller than the 12.2 million impact you see there for 2016. The 2017 impact, smaller than the 12.2 million you can see for 2016 from the earn-through. The second point, which had a bit of attention, is that in recent years, we have been recognizing prior year releases as we provided for claims at 1.5%, but these were settled at 2.5%. We estimate that this would have given us a release of about 10 million pounds in 2016, perhaps a little lower in 2017. We no longer expect to get that release going forward. However, we do expect this will be offset somewhat by movement in the current accident year, as we'll no longer be adding a 1% prudent provision to current year claims, i.e., we'll be booking at -0.75, not at -1.75. The net impact of these two items, of those two little bullets in 2017, we think will be very small. Now, clearly, all those three things together, we think will be small in the context of a very large business with high profitability. Clearly, obviously, the underlying 2017 current year performance will depend on market conditions. Moving down to the balance sheet, this is quite simple. We have higher claims liabilities and lower retained earnings. We maintained our reserve strength overall. Despite Ogden, we see no material impact in 2017. Moving on to Solvency II. In broad terms, the Ogden impact was 180 million pound reduction in eligible own funds, which is pretty similar to the IFRS charge post-tax. The SCR also increased by approximately 80 million, and that's due to higher claims liabilities as a result of Ogden, plus a reduction in tax benefits due to lower 2016 profits. Importantly, it doesn't take account any implications of uncertainty around possible changes we could still have to the discount rate, because that's still up for grabs. Overall, our position is we've absorbed the hit, remain focused on trading. That's what's important to us in 2017. We're going to have very little carry through from what's happened in 2017, and we believe we're well positioned to trade. Let's go to more positive things, the policy count on slide eight. It's down a little over the year. However, this masks another year of growth across our own brand portfolio, and in particular, the direct channel, which gained momentum during 2016. We believe this is a result of offering customers better propositions combined with our improved trading and sharper pricing. Our improved digital capabilities have been a key enabler to this growth as well, allowing customers to purchase our products quickly and easily via their chosen channel, be it direct through our website, call centers, or through price comparison websites. Starting with motor, which is predominantly own brands, motor grew volumes by 4.5% in total. Direct line, Churchill, and Privilege together grew by 5.3% over the year, and the majority of this growth was driven by the direct line brand. In home, it's also been a good year for own brands, which were up 2.3%. This was due to improved trading across both direct and PCW channels. In home partners, which account for around half of home policies, volumes were down 4.7% during the year. The direct growth story continued in Green Flag and commercial as well. Green Flag policies were up 7.4%, and in commercial, our direct line for business brand reported a 6.4% increase in policies. This growth in our own brands in a high shopping environment demonstrates that we're doing the right thing for customers. Turning to premiums, which just to remind you, all exclude IPT. Gross written premiums increased by 3.9%, largely driven by motor. Motor premiums were up 9.4% due to strong new business growth, particularly in direct line. Home premiums were 3.7% lower in 2016, primarily due to partnership volumes. Written premiums for our own brands, direct line, Churchill, and Privilege, were down little in 2016 in home, although we did see some growth in own brands in Q4. Overall, rescue and other premiums were up a little. Within that, rescue was broadly flat, but Green Flag direct business grew premiums by 11%. Commercial premiums were up 3% on last year, mainly due to growth in direct lines of business. Moving on to combined ratios. This improved by 2.2 points to 91.8%. Normalising for weather, the core would have been 93.5%, which is in line with our guidance and pretty similar to the prior year. Overall, we improved the loss ratio, but this was offset by higher expense and commission ratios. Starting with the loss ratio on the top right, which improved 4.5 points to 55%. The current year attritional loss ratio improved yet again, continuing the trend since the IPO. In 2016, we delivered another 0.7 percentage point reduction as a result of improved underwriting. The contribution from prior years was higher yet again, continuing the trend since the IPO. Sorry, the contribution was higher than we expected in 2016 and £51 million more than in 2015. This was mainly due to positive development from the storms at the end of 2015. Finally, the majority of the loss ratio improvement, i.e. 2.5 points, was due to better weather in 2016. Moving to expenses and commissions, the expense ratio was 25.3%, up 1.7 points, due to two items. First, the flood re-levy of £24 million, which equates to roughly 0.8%. And secondly, the intangible asset impairment, which we flagged at Q3, which came in at £39.3 million, or 1.3 points. Absent these items, the expense ratio would have improved by about 0.4%. The commission ratio increased a bit to 11.5% as a result of sharing better weather and prior year development with our partners. Stepping back, we believe that achieving a 93.5% normalised core, improving the current year attritional loss ratio while supporting strong levels of new business growth and investing in the business and absorbing higher levies represents a good result. Let's move on to the ratio trends at a segmental level, starting with motor. A good set of results for motor. Strong top-line growth and disciplined underwriting delivered an improved current year loss ratio. Overall, pre-Ogden, the motor combined ratio increased to 95.1%, mainly due to a higher expense ratio. Moving from left to right, motor delivered a further 1.7 points of improvement in the current year attritional loss ratio to 85%, impressive in the context of the growth we've achieved. The improvement in current year was offset by lower prior year releases, in line with our guidance. The 2-point increase in the expense ratio is all due to the intangible impairment, but as you can see from the waterfall, our run rate expense improved. Commissions were up a little due to a true-up on partnership business, and excluding the impairment charge, motor made good progress year on year, an impressive result when we consider we wrote the highest volume of own brand new business since the IPO. Now for more colour on motor pricing and claims. In 2016, motor took market share at attractive margins, having grown policy count and premiums while improving the CY attritional loss ratio. Starting with pricing, we've changed our disclosures here a bit, replacing price and risk mix metrics with average premium movements, which we believe is an easier metric to understand. Average written premiums increased by 6.3% in 2016 over the year, while the risk in our portfolio declined modestly. Our pricing reflected our claims experience and also enabled us to improve our current year performance and support investments in customer propositions. These investments in propositions, particularly in direct line, have resonated well with customers, enabled us to benefit from the higher levels of shopping, and this has resulted in strong new business growth. And despite the high levels of shopping in the market, our strong retention rates remain stable. On to claims, where trends were broadly in line with what we've previously said. Taking bodily injury first, Ogden aside, it was another benign year for large bodily injury claims, which performed better than our expectations. Small bodily injury continued to perform well, and you can see that in the usual chart with RTA portal stats, which we've included in the appendix. Damage claims, on the other hand, continued to develop adversely. The majority of the adverse performance was driven by increased severity. We expected some damage inflation from our investments in propositions such as seven-day repair and guaranteed hire car, but most comes from general inflation in the cost of parts, paint and labour, along with other factors. Taking all this together, we believe claims inflation is running at the top end of the long-term 3 to 5% average. Now, we've made a change to our reserving chart here as we thought a net view is more useful than gross, given the changes to our reinsurance program over the years. You'll probably be getting your rulers out and comparing the two charts, but essentially the overall trend is the same, as this is pre the change to the Ogden rate. Prior accident years continued to develop favourably, which is a reflection of the conservative approach to reserving and operational improvements in the way we handle claims. The initial current year net loss ratio of 83.4% for 2016 is lower than prior year, consistent with our headline motor result. Looking ahead, our message remains unchanged. Assuming current claims trends continue, we expect the contribution from prior years will be significant in 2017, albeit we'd expect it to reduce over time, as it did a bit in 2016. Moving to home performance on slide 14. Home's combined ratio improved significantly in 2016 to 85.0%, driven by lower weather losses and higher prior year releases. The current year loss ratio deteriorated by 2 points, but at 47.8% is still a good number. The year-on-year increase is partly driven by claims inflation and partly due to changes in tenure and channel mix, away from partners to PCWs, which I'll come on to. Prior year releases were higher in 2016 as Home recognised favourable development on the 2015 storms. The expense ratio increased by 1.9 points due to the additional flood levy in 2016, although we were able to partially offset the cost of that in other efficiency measures. The higher commission ratio in 2016 reflects profit shares associated with favourable weather and prior year development. Now for more colour on home pricing and claims. In home, we maintain competitiveness across our strong own brand portfolio, growing policy count by 2.3% over the year. In our home business, we seek to protect our valuable own brand portfolio and ensure a strong position in all the main channels. The home market remained very competitive in 2016, as shopping rates were high, price comparison sites continued to grow market share. We wrote higher volumes of new business through our own websites and through PCWs, while the impact of deflation does flow through the back book. The change in channel mix and tenure led to a 3.9% reduction in own brand average written premiums in 2016. We saw some underlying improvement in the market later in 2016. After many periods of deflation, you'll recall, we highlighted some stabilization in prices in Q3, and this improvement continued in Q4, where we were able to increase new business prices a little, albeit not enough to keep pace with claims inflation. And on claims, the claims experience in home has been pretty benign over the last few years, and at the half year, we said overall inflation was below the long-term average. In the second half, we saw an increase in claims costs, which we believe reflects inflationary pressure in the building trades. This pressure on margins is reflected in a higher current year attritional loss ratio in 2016, although do remember that 2015 was the best year on current year loss ratio we've had for some time. Overall, we believe the home market is becoming tougher due to rising claims inflation, and it remains very competitive. Against this backdrop, we continue to balance between margin and volumes, aiming to deliver long-term value. Now back to segmental with rescue and other personal lines. Total rescue and other personal lines combined ratio increased to 93.3%. Profit was down by around £6 million. The main movement in this category was a 2.5-point increase in the current year loss ratio, which was mainly due to timing of pricing changes to partnership travel policies. Taking rescue on its own, you can see from the table that rescue combined operating ratio increased a little to 83.4%. Rescue remains the biggest driver of profit in the segment, contributing £42 million to the £46 million for the segment as a whole in 2016, and please see the appendix for more details on that. Last but certainly not least, commercial. It's a great set of results from commercial in 2016, the best results since the IPO. Headline combined ratio was 93.2%, and underwriting profit was £30.6 million, although there were some very favourable tailwinds, namely lower weather and large losses, and some favourable development on the 2015 accident year. Normalising for weather and large losses, commercial core would have been 3 points best in 2015 due to higher prior year, but also some current year improvement. So moving left to right, starting with the current year loss ratio, this improved by 9.5 points. As I said, some of this improvement was due to better weather and fewer large losses, but commercial did deliver over a point of underlying attritional current year improvement due to better pricing and risk selection. Commercial also benefited from higher prior year releases, some of which related to favourable development from the storms at the end of 2015. The expense ratio was up a little in 2016 due to marketing activity, while commissions were flat. Commercial made $66.6 million of operating profit in 2016, more than three times more than 2015. And in the appendix, we've got the usual segmental P&Ls, again, pre- and post-Ogden. Now let's come back to costs for the group as a whole. 2016, our total cost base was $924 million, $39 million higher than 2015, which is all due to an impairment on intangible assets. The impairment charge of $39 million was a non-cash item. It reflects the large volume of work we're doing on IT projects to enhance our digital offering, customer experience, and operational efficiencies. Excluding this non-cash item, we held our costs broadly flat, having fully absorbed an additional £24 million flood re-levy in the first half and achieved a 5% year-on-year reduction in the second half, the latter due mainly to lower claims handling expenses. This is a pretty good result when you consider we've also absorbed inflation again, keeping staff costs flat year-on-year. And flat costs also means we've effectively managed costs associated with the highest new business growth we've had since the IPO. Our marketing costs were down another 4% in 2016, lower spend since the IPO. Overall, we've made significant progress on costs over the last 5 years whilst investing in our capabilities and propositions. It's this investment that's driving our strong brand performance, and these numbers demonstrate our discipline on costs. In ratio terms, in 2016, our expense ratio was 25.3% and 24% ex the impairment. Looking ahead, we see further opportunity to improve efficiency, so we can continue investing in the business and improving our competitiveness. We therefore aim to reduce the expense ratio in 2017, along with the commission ratio, normalised for weather, and we aim to reduce further both ratios over time. In 2016, we delivered a robust investment result against the backdrop of increased financial market uncertainties and further yield compression. Starting with the top left, headline assets under management stood at $6.6 billion at the end of December, 3.5% lower than the previous year. On the top right, you can see the income yield increased a bit to 2.5% in 2016, helping to offset the impact of lower AUM to maintain, enabling us to maintain investment income of $165 million. The investment return yield fell to 2.6% in 2016, as we recognized gains of just $3.5 million compared with $29 million in the previous year, and that's due to fewer unrealized property gains in 2016 per our guidance. Looking at the asset allocation in more detail, on the next page, as part of the ongoing review of our investment strategy, we decided to exit securitized credit during Q3 2016. We also sold two investment properties in 2016, realizing a small gain above unrealized fair values. Investment in three new mandates commenced with the subordinated financial debt and global credit at their benchmarks. The third is commercial real estate loans, which aim to be fully funded by the end of 2017. Debt securities make up the majority of our portfolio, with $4.7 billion of assets, of which 69.9% are rated A or above. In terms of outlook, ongoing yield compression is reflected in our 27 guidance of 2.4% income yield. That's based on the current yield curve and assumes interest rates remain unchanged. This slide shows how we get from the headline ongoing operating profit of $578.6 million pre-Ogden to profit after tax of $452.6 million. The runoff segment of $69 million pre-Ogden was slightly lower than prior year, but again, it more than offset restructuring costs. Looking ahead, we expect to incur further restructuring costs, and these will be substantially offset by runoff profit over the four-year period 2015 to 18. Diluted earnings per share from ongoing operations increased by 23% to 32.7 pence pre-Ogden and was down versus prior year after adjusting for Ogden. Now we'll turn to coverage, to capital. You'll recall we transitioned to our internal model at the half year following PRA approval for our model in June. At the half year, our Solvency II ratio under the model was 184%, slightly above our 140 to 180% target range, which we also set out at the time. This was a strong starting position and has meant we were able to comfortably absorb the Ogden charge, pay our ordinary dividend, and still remain above the midpoint of our target range at 165%. Our solvency ratio fully recognizes the new Ogden discount rate of minus 0.75%, although it doesn't take into account the implications from the uncertainty arising from the new government consultation. The impact of the change to the Ogden discount rate cost us 24 points on our Solvency II ratio. As we showed earlier, this was approximately a £180 million reduction in own funds and an £80 million increase in solvency capital requirements. Overall, we think we have a strong solvency position, and this strength remains a key enabler to our strategy. And we'll submit our final solvency calculations in May, along with the rest of the industry. Let's go through some of the moving parts. Slide 25, we've broken out the moving parts. Sorry, slide 23. In our own funds calculation. This is the first time we've provided a slide, and the numbers shouldn't be too surprising. At a high level, the solvency world, two world looked quite similar to the IFRS world in 2016. We don't expect the IFRS and Solvency II world to align every year, but we do expect the two to broadly reflect each other over time. During 2016, the group's own funds decreased from 2.47 billion to 2.34 billion. First, we had a one-off movement due to the change in treatment of the risk margin as we moved from standard formulas to Solvency II. We benefited from mark-to-market movements in 2016 as interest rates fell and credit spreads narrowed. We generated approximately 490 million of Solvency II capital in the year, which was reduced by the Ogden rate change of approximately 190 million. Capital expenditure continued at around 100 million per annum, reflecting investments we continue to make into the business. And finally, we continue to return significant dividends to our shareholders, totaling 340 million in 2016. Moving to dividends on slide 24, as you've heard, we've announced today our final regular dividend of 9.7 pence per share, takes the regular dividend to 14.6 pence for the year at 5.8% growth in the year, and it's in line with our ambition to grow the regular dividend annually, including the special dividend we paid at the half year, but excluding the impact of international in 2015, year on year we've increased capital distributions by 8.8% from 22.6 pence to 24.6 pence per share. In terms of earnings, although we don't target a payout ratio, we declared 338 million of dividends in 2016, which is over 100% of our net income for the year. Before I move to the outlook, let me just summarise some of the financial highlights. 2016 marks another year of progress. We grew premiums and improved the current year loss ratio again. Our underlying cost base was flat, having offset the flood re-levy, and costs associated with new business growth through improving our underlying efficiency. We grew our investment income yield to deliver a robust result against the backdrop of market volatility. We grew the regular dividend again in line with our policy of aiming to grow this in real terms. And finally, our capital position post-dividend remained strong despite the charges from Ogden. Now let's look at the outlook for 2017. We'll talk about this in segments as well as at the group level, starting with motor. The motor market is facing significant change following the Ogden rate decision and forthcoming IPT increases and other regulatory actions. The high levels of customer shopping in 2016 look set to continue in 2017, and we believe this represents an opportunity. In terms of prior year reserve releases, we expect the contribution will be significant in 2017, albeit will reduce over time. In home, after years of premium deflation, we saw some improvement in the new business market in Q4, albeit not enough to keep pace with claims inflation. We continue to aim to protect our valuable own brand portfolio, seeking to balance value and volume to deliver sustainable long-term value. Our partnership with Nationwide was due to terminate in June 2017. Their plans are currently being reviewed, and this may result in the migration moving later into the second half of 2016. While I'm on the subject of partners, let me just mention the Prudential. We had a long-term relationship. That deal came to an end this year. We have a new deal where we'll be paying them a brand license, but commissions we will not be paying anymore, so we'll keep that. And net-net, that's favourable. It's one of the reasons why we see commission ratios going down in the future, as we said. Finally, in home, the weather load for 2017 has reduced to around £65 million, reflecting lower volumes. In rescue and other personal lines, we'll continue to enhance the green flag customer experience, building on the growth we achieved in 2016. In the rest of personal lines, we plan to roll out new initiatives in pet and travel to help drive profitable GWP growth there. Prior year releases in rescue and other personal lines are expected to be significantly lower in 2017 following one-off benefits and adjustments in recent years. Finally, commercial. We're aiming to build on the excellent progress we've made in commercial direct market through delivery of further improvements to our trading capabilities in Direct Line for Business. While in NIG, we have a number of operational initiatives in train designed to deliver effortless trading to our brokers to differentiate us from the competition. Turning to what this means for group results, in 2017, we're targeting a combined ratio in the range 93 to 95%, assuming normal annual weather and no further change in the Ogden discount rate. Within that, as I said, we are aiming to reduce both the expense ratio and the commission ratio in 2017. Moving across to investments, our 2017 guidance of a 2.4% income yield is based on the current yield curve and assumes interest rates remain unchanged. We continue to expect assets under management to decline modestly. Finally, we continue with our ongoing target to deliver sustainable growth at a 15% or better return on tangible equity. With that, I'll hand over to Paul.
Thank you, John. The success that John's just described means that we've taken the Ogden impact in our stride, and we believe we are well placed to succeed in the market results. But over the next 10 minutes or so, I'm not going to mention the O word, and instead deep dive into two things that I'm really proud of that bring our strategy to life, starting with Great Retailer and sharing with you the story of our fantastic turnaround in our biggest, most profitable and important brand, Direct Line. For us, being a great retailer is about building compelling brands. And we believe in owning powerful retail brands and owning our customers, which not only puts the fate of our business firmly in our own hands, but we also believe this is where most of the economic value lies in the insurance value chain. We also believe that owning multiple brands means you can better meet the diverse needs and preferences of customers. We've done a lot to improve our brands over the last 7 years. We started by retooling the basics supporting all our brands, regaining our excellence in pricing and claims and improving our cost base. With these basics in place, the next urgent task was to get competitive on PCWs through our Privilege and Churchill brands. Now, working with the PCWs themselves and optimizing our marketing, products, and pricing for the channel, we really turned this around and it worked. Privilege and Churchill turned around their competitiveness and started to grow. And today, they successfully compete against the most competitive and efficient players in this channel. Our next task was to turn around Direct Line, where a multifunctional team was charged with reinventing the brands for both personal and SME customers with a launch in August 2014. So I'm really proud to put up this slide showing the turnaround we've achieved in Direct Line, together with some of the many initiatives that delivered it. This chart shows the sequential change in the number of Direct Line home and motor policies, showing the improving trend in policies almost immediately after the relaunch in August 2014, and then the happy day in September 2015 where the brand finally went into growth. The chart plots the many initiatives along the bottom and just some of the financial and other benefits flagged above. Clearly a lot of individual components to success, but let me start by telling you the strategy behind it. Our start point, as you can see on the left-hand side here, was the recognition of the inherent value of the Direct Line customer. They liked the direct relationship. They valued service, experience, and brand. They bought more products. They stayed longer. And, adjusting for everything else, they simply had a better claims performance. We believed that by investing some of that additional value back into the business, we could make our existing customers even happier and so further increase their retention and product holding. And we could also recruit new customers with similar characteristics and similarly higher value. And so it proved. Through this reinvestment, we pretty much made everything better. Here are just some of the improvements. We gave customers better insurance with unique features such as 7-day car repair promise, guaranteed hire car, and our emergency plumber proposition. We gave them better value, such as by removing midterm amendment fees and through competitive pricing. And we also gave them a better experience, such as introducing digital claim services, a motor claims tracking portal, as well as investing in completely retraining over 4,000 frontline staff with new skills to give customers more empathetic service, and our net promoter scores have climbed ever since. All this communicated with drama and wit with our award-winning marketing using our Fixer campaign. Now, this has been a huge amount of work across our 10,000 people, and I'd really like to emphasize how hard this is to replicate. Firstly, delivering these propositions isn't easy, and it really helps to have both scale and to be vertically integrated. Let me take, for example, the 7-day car repair proposition. Delivering it is really helped by our early direct contact with our customers and our ability to get them to share photos and videos from their phones so we can be ordering parts immediately. It's also really helped by owning body shops. We own 19 now and growing, making us the second largest body shop owner in the UK and the largest insurer-owned repairer in the UK. This means we can have state-of-the-art centres and we can fast-track direct line repairs. But having differentiated propositions would be hard to justify unless you can tell new and existing customers about it. It's hard for PCW brands to justify this investment when their main means of explaining their product to customers is simply ticks on a PCW site. No wonder there is such homogeneity in the propositions of PCW brands. But no such problem for Direct Line. Our leading brand and award-winning capabilities in social, digital, and customer experience capabilities mean that we get to interact directly with millions of customers. We generate about 4.5 million direct quotes a year from our own websites and our own call centres, meaning that we can directly explain our propositions to our customers. All this hard work and investment has generated tangible benefits. We've achieved higher new business sales, up 31% across motor and home in 2016, and an 8.2% uplift in Direct Line for Business quotes. We've also seen higher persistency, up between 4 percentage points and 5 percentage points, and all done at a lower marketing spend with greater efficiency. This additional value creates and completes the virtuous circle. I'll say that again. This additional value completes the virtuous circle. More value for customers, generating more customers and more valuable customers, and so the flywheel starts to turn. And we've already recognized the increased value with further investments in proposition and in price. This has, in turn, improved our marketing efficiency to such a degree that we can now acquire a new motor policy direct for a lower cost than we can via a PCW, a great asset going forward. Let me end this section by showing you the two latest ads that are about to go on air for two brand new propositions, which of course come on top of all the propositions we've given our customers already. These two for SME and for motor. We also have a very, very secret one on home that's too secret to share with you today.
Judith, Keith, you're on your way home from holiday to find yourselves going no further than the car park.
Yeah, that's fine.
Tony here knows where you live, and he's going to take the two of you for a little ride. If you can't drive your car after an accident, Direct Line are the only insurers who will get you a taxi to continue your journey and recover your car. Now, before you go, aren't you forgetting your donkey? No, this one. Trevor.
Yeah?
Winston Wolfe, you're a private landlord, right? Your tenants are in a tough financial situation. They can't pay their rent, which is keeping you up at night.
Yeah, but...
But you're with Direct Line. They repay any unpaid rent until the tenants are out. So relax, Trevor. It's time for me to put you to sleep. Coco?
I hope you'll agree that both these ads tick all the boxes. Insightful, engaging, dramatizing a relevant insurance event, and memorably demonstrating why Direct Line outperforms other insurers in fixing customers' problems. And now to lead and disrupt the market. In the interest of time, I'm going to keep this to a single slide on the topic of connected and autonomous cars. But this belies all the focus and energy we're putting into understanding and influencing the future of motoring. We believe the time to act is now, even if the real-world impact will take a few years or even decades to fully develop. That's because decisions taken today, like the recently proposed changes to UK law for automated driving systems, will profoundly influence the future. It's also the reason we've spent time working closely with motor manufacturers on connected and autonomous cars. I'm delighted that we're able to extend our successful motor insurance partnership with Peugeot Citroën in the UK for a further 4 years. This partnership packages insurance, including telematics, with car finance. We now want to build on the success and create propositions based on the technology already fitted into the car, and so we're avoiding the need to retrofit black boxes. Similarly, through our relationship with the Flow, we're also looking to use data connected by Renault's R-Link multimedia platform. On to autonomy, we're working with Tesla to understand the specific characteristics of electric cars and the role advanced technology and driving aids can play in enhancing road safety and therefore insurance. This year, Tesla became introducer-appointed representative, able to refer customers to Direct Line so we can insure the customers of Tesla. And in 2016, we kicked off a partnership called Move UK with the UK government, technology providers and car manufacturers to accelerate the development, market readiness and deployment of automated driving systems. With ADS systems observing and recording in the background whilst Move UK vehicles are driven normally, we're learning how ADS technology would respond in real-life situations, with over 200 different channels of data collected from each vehicle. So hopefully this, we've given you a deeper insight into two of our key strategies, helping you understand why we're so confident in our ability to win in the current market and to sustain it into the next. Our strategy is delivering results with benefits coming through in multiple areas, yet we still remain excited by the significant opportunities we see to improve. Here we give you the usual level of detail of our 2017 priorities, but in the interest of time, I'll let you read these at your leisure. Of course, you can come back to us for questions. So some key messages from me before we go to questions. Against the backdrop of a shopping market, we are winning in the marketplace by giving our customers more of what they want at a competitive price. Our solvency is strong at 165% and has comfortably absorbed the cost of lower Ogden discount rate, whilst we reserved our reserve strength and we expect prior releases to be largely unaffected by the Ogden decision and to remain a significant feature of our results, albeit they will reduce over time. Looking forward, improving efficiency remains core to our strategy, and we aim to improve both our expense and our commission ratios in 2017. But we're also going to continue to invest in our future capability, as I've just taken you through. With this in mind, we are aiming for a 2017 core in the range of 93% to 95%. This, of course, assumes normal annual major weather claim costs for home and commercial, and assumes no further change in the Ogden discount rate. Dramatic, I know. And our 15% ROTE target remains ongoing. You may have seen today that our long-term incentive plans have been increased for the next grant to 15 to 18% range, keeping us aligned with our shareholders and keenly focusing on maintaining the group's strong returns. Finally, the multi-brand, multi-channel strategy that brought us success in the shopping markets of 2016 means we're well-placed to win in the disruptive markets of 2017. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll now take your questions first in the room, then Rosie onto the phones. Good. Right, should we do, we'll do a somewhat clockwise motion. Yeah. Microphone, please, Eddie.
Thank you. Arjun Van Veen from UBS. If I may ask a couple of questions around pricing post the Ogden change. Some of your competitors already moved, so if you can give a bit, maybe a bit of color around what's happened so far. Secondly, your confidence in being able to push through the price increases you need. And thirdly, given your retentions are lower than, quite a bit lower than some of your competitors, that obviously creates potentially an opportunity should you wish to take a bit of market share. So maybe if you can comment a little bit on that as well, to the extent
okay.
you can.
So let me have a go, and I normally disappoint on future-looking pricing statements because we don't like to talk about future pricing for all sorts of reasons, including we don't know what's going to happen in competitive markets. But listen, we've taken some pricing action, as we said we would. Remember, of course, we're shielded, as you point out, by reinsurance, as are many of our competitors. The level of shielding, both in terms of deductible and date, is variable in the market, and we think we're in pretty good shape with a million and all of 2017 covered. So in a way, we've got a lower level, we've got some shielding. So obviously there is some, as John pointed out, there is some inbound cost pressure already this year, but there'll be more depending on the outcome of two things, really, the reinsurance renegotiation for 2018. And, of course, we are not planning or betting on it, but there is an expedited consultation going on. with indications that should that consultation recommend a change, that there could be some expedited lawmaking. And, of course, that could theoretically come into effect within 2017. So, really, I think the big impact, there's a lot of unknowns, and therefore what will happen on pricing, I think, is still to be seen. Yep.
Thanks, Thomas Seidel from Bernstein. First, again, on this octane price change, so when you say it has little impact for 17 forward, so does that assume that you expect the market, you know, to all increase the price in line, and hence there's little impact going forward? First question. And second, on home, you lost a little bit of volume last year. To what extent is this driven by PCW, and what is your outlook? How can you be competitive given the dramatically rising penetration in this segment?
Okay. So listen, our comment on 17 is a lot of it is about the reinsurance protection we have in 2017. So we're saying there is obviously a net cost as well. And as you know, I can't comment on future pricing, but you know, we do work back from the loss ratios we want to write at, and that. So what I'm saying is there's more uncertainty about what the 18 outcome, as I've said, for lots of reasons, including, by the way, there is something going in our favour, which is the whiplash reform coming in October is going back in the other direction. So there's quite a lot of moving parts for 18. You know, does the rate change again in, you know, theoretically in 17? What happens on reinsurance, which obviously impacts people before us, and we'll see the impact of that in the marketplace. And then, as I say, in 18, we've also got the other direction, the whiplash. So there's just more uncertainty in 18. But, you know, our stance in that uncertainty is, you know, we work back from the loss ratios we want to write at, and then we take the volume that we can. 17 is less uncertainty.
Our guidance for the current year for 17, 93 to 95, there's very, very little impact of Ogden in there. Right? It's pre-Ogden. If they change the rate, obviously that would change. So we're not assuming any great benefit. We're not assuming any great hit. We told you a little bit about some of the small impacts we're getting. We're going into this year almost as in every other year, but it's going to be a very exciting year because a lot of people are impacted in different ways and there are lots of things going on, and that kind of uncertainty continues through 18. That's really the message. We're feeling pretty confident going to as we are already trading in 17.
So on home, we are, just to be really clear, and this is also true in motor, we're competitive on all channels. What I was saying is we've done a great turnaround in our PCW competitiveness. And now we've layered on top of that growth in direct line, which is a fantastic combination. And the same is true in home. And actually, we are very successful in winning business on price comparison websites and home. Some of the deterioration of the loss ratio you've seen is that, so some of it is risk and some of it is mix, and that mix is channel mix. So the characteristics of the PCW channel is it's slightly worse loss ratios. It has other characteristics. Now, there's another thing going on in home, which is more of a cyclical. So there's a secular thing. There's a mixed shift towards PCWs, which we're competitive in and we're happy with. There's a cyclical thing going on in home, which is building costs, as John talked about, did go up. And towards the end of the year, priced for that to seek to recover that. So that's our normal business, which is we look at, you know, we target loss ratios. Yep. Andreas?
I'm Gareth from the Peel Hunt. Ogden again. Would it be possible to do a walkthrough from gross to net on your Ogden reserve addition of $205 million, including, you know, how much reinsurance absorption there was, any use of the risk margin, and the assumptions you made on PPO propensity? It seems from your sensitivities that not much has changed on the PPO sensitivity. So just wonder where, how much you used there. Second question, could you run your thoughts on why you skipped the final special and tie that to your solvency range of 140 to 180. And then finally, on the comment you made about having lower acquisition costs within direct line versus PCWs, how much lower are they? Thank you.
we're not going to disclose the last one, but I mean, even we've often said, look, if you take PCW versus direct, you know, we love the direct channel for all sorts of reasons, you know, persistency and cross-product holdings and everything like that. But the problem is they're expensive to acquire. We've often said that. I'm now no longer saying that. So that is, to even get to the same level is really impressive progress. And I think strategically gives us a real edge in a shopping market. And as I say, whatever happens in Ogden, there's a lot hitting the customer this year, and we think it'll be a shopping market again. There's another IPT going through. There's going to be Ogden changes going through. It's going to look like a shopping market. 2016 was shopping market driven by IPT and other factors. Renewal price disclosure in April as well. So there's a lot of shopping. We did really well in the shopping market in 2016, which is why we're optimistic we can do well in the shopping market in 2017. And the Ogden hit, as John will say, is kind of is in the past. And our relative size of our Ogden hit is, as John said, wasn't about 16. It's a kind of a historical size thing, and that's behind us. So we really are, you know, on terms with anybody else. In fact, with our reinsurance position, I think we're feeling pretty strong in the market. John?
Shall I do some of those other ones? I'll do my best. So in terms of gross to net, probably the single number to give you is ceded reserves have gone up by 320 million year on year. Oh, no, as a result of Ogden, 320 million. On the risk margin, the risk margin improves a bit because the PPOs are particularly costly to the risk margin. So that pure change makes the risk margin better. But the increase in reserves is an offset, partly offsetting factor. And then obviously year on year, you've got the thing I mentioned earlier, which is that we moved from the low risk margin standard model to the high risk margin, higher risk margin internal model in June. So you've got a few movements, but the pure Ogden one is favorable because of the net impact on that of that PPO point. On the PPO sensitivity, propensity, we do assume that as the Ogden rate goes down, there'll be fewer and fewer PPOs. Obviously, below zero, there's a point at which, from profit perspective, a PPO is better, if you like, for our profit than at zero, because we discount them at real zero, than a negative discount rate. But from a capital perspective, it's worse, and that's an interesting thing. Obviously, we don't get a choice normally. The claimant may have a choice, and we'll see what happens when the government comes out with their consultation. But certainly, as you come down, you get fewer PPOs. And we've had, in particular, a release from our PPO margin, because we had a propensity margin. If you're worried they might go the other way previously, we've had a release from that. We no longer need to carry that. So hopefully I've answered some of those questions. On the special, clearly, you know, we showed you that the impact of Ogden was 24 points on the ratio. So if we hadn't had Ogden, you know, I would have thought we will never know for certain.
Well, we'd have recommended to the board.
Because we could have a hypothetical board meeting, but as management, we'd have probably recommended to the board there should be a special at the year end. That was 189 post-regular, so very, very quite likely. And I don't think anyone will be that surprised that 165, they wouldn't be. I think people would like to know much more about the future of special dividends, I'd love to be able to say. But obviously our board will decide each year based on the current, you know, the conditions that are obtained then. And we've said normally it's going to be once a year around this time, you know, when we do the final results, and we look at our business plan, look at opportunities and so on. So that's what we'd expect. As you think about our profitability, and we've said that over time, our IFRS profits and our Solvency II capital generation should be broadly aligned, not every year, but broadly aligned over time. And clearly, our IFRS profits do exceed our regular dividend by some considerable margin. We aim to grow our regular dividend, but even so, there's a margin there, and therefore, you know, all other things being equal, you'd expect that over time, there'd be some years when we generate a special dividend, certainly. But as Neil always said when we started off at post-IPO, a special is a special, and a regular is a regular.
Yeah, Oliver.
Oliver Steele at Deutsche Bank. You'll be relieved I'm not going to ask about Ogden.
Oh.
Though I might mention the overhead. So first question is, I don't know how far we can push you on this solvency range. Somebody said to me this morning, which I thought was intellectually quite a rigorous comment, is how can you pay a special if you're actually not above the top end of your target range? So again, I mean, can we sort of see if we can push you a bit on how comfortable you feel with 165? Would you expect that 165 to need to move up over the next few years? If so, how long do you think that could take and so on?
Do you have any more parts to your question? Do all your questions.
Okay. Oh, yeah, sorry.
So the other two questions, much easier. First of all, the commission ratio seemed to be a bit higher than expected. You mentioned some of that in home being profit commissions being paid out. You also talked about a true-up on the motor partnership numbers or something. So how exceptional was that commission rate increase? And then finally, your cash percentage of the investment, 16% against your target of 9. So perhaps you can just sort of talk about what you're doing on that.
All for you, John.
So I think the dividend, I don't think I'm not going to add too much. I'd love to, but I'm not sure, but I'll try. Would we pay a special below 180? Actually, if you go back, there were times when we paid a special below top end of the range. We didn't, you know, we kept at the top of the range while we were waiting for Solvency II to land. We made that clear, and then Solvency II landed, and we did. So I think it's quite possible for us to pay a special below 180, but that will be decided each year by the board and, you know, against the points I made. Could it be paid at 166? I can't answer that one. It'll have to depend on the circumstances at the time. But as I said to Andreas, the dynamics of it are, because you asked about that as well. You know, if you grow, you can model this. I mean, if you've got a model for our profit, and if you grow our regular dividend, it's been growing at around 5%, 6%. So if you grow that, you'll see that we build surplus, and therefore. We've given you an indication of the CapEx and those kind of things. You can make an assumption about mark-to-markets and those sorts of things. And, you know, I think your model would show that 165 growing. And that's encouraging, clearly, from a dividend perspective. Probably all we can do, but I'm sure your model will be incredibly accurate.
Commission ratio?
I know most things are very small. The big things in there are whether... in terms of the home business... we profit share, obviously, the good and bad weather with the partners. And in this case, they had, or we shared, good weather from the current year, 16, hardly any weather cost at all. And in 15, where we shared the hit, as we reserved on 31st December, for the storms of around that time, we've had a relief from that. And so you can see our own home prior year is up a lot. And we've shared, that's after sharing quite a lot of that with them. So it's very weather-related in this case. So I think you can probably extract that and say that's not normal. And we have talked about the commission ratio trend, so I'll just maybe say a couple of points about that. So obviously, when Nationwide goes, then being a big partner, you'd expect our commission ratio to go down. So that's sort of not due to our skill, really. We'd love them to stay, but they're not. They might stay a little bit longer, but they aren't going to stay long-term. But there are other things that we feel more positive about in terms of our commission ratio move that we see over time. So the deal with Churchill's done with Pru is favourable to our commission ratio and favourable net-net. It's a positive. The growth of Direct Line for Business is obviously favourable to our commission ratio. And the growth of own brands is also favourable. So there are lots of things we're doing that are positive. That if you looked at our five-year plan, you'd see our commission ratio coming down over the years, including 17.
Good. And then cash, John?
Cash. It's an interesting, it's interest rates, isn't it? We'd love to find lots of great places to put cash to work within risk appetite and so on. It's actually a struggle to find them. Meanwhile, we're all sort of thinking that one day interest rates might start to rise, then it's better to be in cash than to be in something that will be more long-term. If people have got interesting ideas, we think we've kind of done all the things within our risk appetite pretty much to be diversified, not to take too many risks, to get decent returns. I think we've done a reasonable job, but we've sort of eked out as best we can. I think now we really do need those interest rates to rise.
Okay. Yep. Sorry, Jan, we'll come to you next.
It's Cameron Hussain from RBC. Two questions. First of all, coming back to Ogden again, so apologies to everyone in the room for that. There was a meeting last week with the Chancellor, the CEOs of a number of insurance companies. Could you give us a flavour of kind of what the feeling was in the room? And do you believe this is something that the government might want to correct, or doesn't feel that the minus 0.75 is the right answer? That's the first question. And the second question, just on the expense ratio, desire to improve that in 2017, what's the right space for us to look at that expense ratio? Is it 24 or 25?
Okay. Thanks. So it was a Chatham House meeting, but there was a... So I'm going to rely on what I say on the two statements, the Joint Chancellor ABI statement and then obviously the original MOJ statement on Monday morning, which we're all gathered around the screens for, I'm sure you were as well. I read into the first, the MOJ statement, a sense that they thought it was the right law, minus 0.75, but they weren't fulsome in terms of saying it was the right outcome at minus 0.75, and therefore I think even they were saying they felt bound by the law. We disagree, by the way, on them being bound by the law, but in their interpretation, I think that was their proclamation. And then obviously the Chancellor was quite careful in what he said, urgent consultation, bringing forward necessary legislation at an early stage, which I'm encouraged by. So obviously there needs to be a process, there needs to be a consultation. Many of our arguments, you know, are well prepared. We need to update them. And they rest a lot on what do people actually invest these lump sums in, which is not ILGS, we think. Which is, you know, and it's not, we think, assets with a negative return. So that's the basis. We obviously need to hear that out, and the other side need to have their stuff head out. Our desire would be to attach this to some legislation as soon as possible if the outcome of the consultation is that there should be a change. And of course there are, you know, this is like catching trains. You can do, you know, there are some bills going through at the moment. The prison and courts bill is an attractive one from our point of view that's going through at the moment, and that would be one if the consultation comes through at the right stage with the right outcome from our point of view. That would be a candidate, I think. So we are encouraged by that. But I think it's really important to say government have got to run a fair process now. We'd expect nothing less if we were on the other side of it, and it's got to be evidence based.
And on the expense ratio, it's the lower number, it's the 24 number, ex impairment. Yeah, that's the base.
Okay, sorry, we're going to go to...
Yeah, just a couple on reserves. So I'm wondering if you could give us an update on how you're reserving now, because I understand that last year you decided, correct me if I'm wrong, but you decided not to put a margin over best estimate. I'm wondering whether you're still doing that going forward, and so should we then expect the buffer in reserves to decline over time and subsequently the reserve releases? And then secondly, I noted that your reserve releases, excluding the impact of Ogden, were higher than last year, so I note 14 percentage points. So I'm just wondering where the majority of that is coming from.
Thanks. I'll deal with the second one first. So we had said that, so in 2016 we had, if you like, unexpected reserve releases from weather impacts from the storms of December 2015, which helped both home and commercial and should be regarded as kind of one-off weather events. And that's what really boosted the prior year for 2016, because in motor, which is the source of most of our prior year, and certainly on an ongoing basis, it was slightly lower as we'd predicted. So let's talk about that, because the main... when you talk about reserve strength, the main reserve, we do have reserve strength in many places, but the biggest part of it is motor. So you're right. We did stop in 2015 adding more margin to the current year because we felt that we'd reached an adequate point of conservatism on our reserving as a whole. And that's continued, and I expect that to continue. If you compare N16 to N15, we're saying that our total reserving strength is overall pretty much maintained, so still very strong. There are some movements, however, within that, between what's happened on the actuarial best estimate and what's happened in the margin. So our actuarial best estimate, which is by far and away the largest part of our reserves, is still very strong, and we look at a variety of measures, and we have third-party reviews and so on, and it's clearly very strong in my opinion. That's not, you know, pre-Ogden and post-Ogden. Our margin, as a result, we have reduced somewhat, and there are really two impacts in that. One is, and the first impact has nothing to do with Ogden. So we looked at our total bodily injury reserves over the whole portfolio, and we decided there was adequate conservatism in the actuarial best estimate not to have to hold much more margin as well. So we've released some margin from that. And then post-Ogden, we released this one-off special, I call them binary, provision we had for PPO propensity, because we have a pretty conservative PPO propensity assumption in our ABE, and we had, because we were worried about potential volatility, an extra margin in the margin, and that's gone. We don't need that. So we take those two elements into account. Our pure margin has gone down. And if you trace, I'm not going to go through all the numbers, but if you trace some of the numbers on capital generation and so on, there's an influence of that in there. However, the total reserving strength remains very strong, as checked out by third party. And in particular, when we look at all the stats and data we get on motor and particularly large bodily injury and small bodily injury, it looks very favorable, which is why we've made the statement we've made. I think one of the, just to reflect on why this has changed a bit in terms of how we're thinking about it is, obviously when we IPO'd, the problem we had in 2008, 9, 10 was relatively recent in one's memory, and it conditioned our view about the actual best estimate. So we wanted to have a very big margin over it, and that grew, as we just need to worry about it. And we kept them, and obviously they stay very separate in accounting terms and how we manage them. But we looked at them in two bunches and said, well, we can't assume there's conservatism in the actual best estimate. So any conservatism we want must be in the margin. Well, I think we've, you know, having had many more years of experience, you know, pretty favorable actually. We've now come to the view that there is conservatism in the actual best estimate on the IFRS basis, and therefore we can look at it as a whole rather than just look at the margin.
And as a whole, long speech. Just end with a positive.
End with a positive. As a whole, it is maintained. So that's the key message.
Good. Thank you.
Oh, and sorry, looking forward, because you asked that as well, we're saying for motor, we're saying we'll still be significant because the actual reserve is still conservative, even though we don't have margin. But we do expect it to reduce over time. And why is that? Well, partly because we're still getting releases from very old years, and that will stop at some point. It's outperformed our expectations, and it's not all due to luck and over-reserving. Some of it's due to actual activity by Steve and his team, but it will eventually stop. Secondly, obviously, we've reduced our reinsurance deductible consistently, so the new years will give less. And thirdly, we've had runoff. So those are the reasons why it will reduce. But we track it very, very carefully, and we can predict it, I think, better than we could before, if I could put it like that, which is why, for the first time, I actually did produce a lower PY on motor, albeit only a little, as I had guided.
Which
I will not take any credit. No.
Good. Right. Andrew.
Morning. Sandra Crean, Autonomous. Three questions. Could you give us some guidance on the unrealized and realized gains, which dropped off a lot this year? Could you also give us, on an accident year basis, the impact of Ogden on the different accident years, please, so we can see behind that? And then thirdly, I suppose it's a request. You're making a big thing, and I can see why. The power in the engine is really, a lot of it is in the Direct Line brand, which it does differentiate you from other players in the industry. Could we get some sense of the scale of that business by premium and how much of the profitability is coming from there?
Okay, so I'll give John time to think about the first two. So it's about half our policies, more than half our premiums, and I'm not going to disclose the profitability because we don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole, but I mean, it is, as I've said, you know, intrinsically it's more valuable and has been more valuable, and even after investing some of it back, still more valuable. So a lot of our confidence in our mood music today is by having turned that around. That's a big deal for us. John?
Yeah, gains. Well, I think, you know, we didn't really expect to get as big property gains as we've had. You know, we were quite lucky with the timing. It wasn't just fantastic skill. We wanted to make property investments to back PPOs as a long-term thing. We happened to invest at a good time, and we made lots of gains. We were a bit worried with all the Brexit stuff they might reverse. They haven't reversed, actually. We've been able to sell a couple of properties that are even slightly above that. But do we expect that to continue forever? I don't think we can predict that will happen. And on the bonds, you know, we will get some gains as we sort of try and optimize the portfolio, but we don't in general expect much in the way of gains. On Ogden accident years, I do have some information. Did you warn me about this? So the biggest Ogden, the biggest Ogden hit by accident year was 2014, and the but they do, but there's an impact on all years, right back to 2009 and prior. But the biggest of all is 2014. There's probably a.
Can we get figures later?
We'll see if we can provide the figures. I can't think of a reason why not. But we'll if we can
if
find
we
one.
If we think of a reason why not, we'll explore that. Yes. Great. I think we need to give some time to people on the phones. We'll just take a couple more in the room, I think. Yeah.
HSBC, three questions. Firstly, could you say more in terms of the cost reduction from the admin side, what areas you're looking at, et cetera, and how should we think of it over the next 2 years or 3 years? Secondly, going back to the question on the solvency ratio, as in from a standalone basis, as in if I look at your solvency, the target range, it's still higher than some of the other players. The 165 ratio still sits okay. Would that be a good level to operate the business from a management standpoint, as in that second? Thirdly, on the Nationwide deal, as in what has led to the delay there? Thanks.
I think the last one, I think you have to ask them and potentially their new provider. We're there to help in any transitions.
Do you want to deal with the dividend? It's your turn. The solvency.
No, I think you're doing so well.
We'll deal with the cost first while trying to get the answer to that one. So just to give you some things that happened in 16 on costs, we closed the site, or we downsized the site, actually. We moved from a big site in Bristol to a small site in Bristol. We offshored a large chunk of finance. We offshored more claims. We set up a second offshore center in South Africa, which is doing well in terms of sales and service. So, you know, it's pretty active. We got a new procurement function. There's lots of things going on in, you know, they're not dramatic things. They're just continuing progress. We look at our footprint, our sites. We look at our, you know, we've got quite high turnover of staff. You know, do we have to replace one for one? All those things you'd expect. Marketing's got more efficient. So we expect improvement in a number of those things. How do we feel about the 165? Well, look, I think, as management, I don't think the regular dividend was ever in question, so I don't think it's a huge test of that. So I don't want to overdo this, but it's of some encouragement to me that the board are happy at 165 at this point. That doesn't mean that it'll be 165 or lower at the end of this year.
It might be. Your home is at risk.
You know,
right.
And it's not out of our hands. I mean, it's for us to recommend. And, we'll look at the risks then. If there's Ogden risk out then, because the Chancellor hasn't finished, we'll have to take it into account. If the Ogden rate thing stays as it is with, you know, the possible worst thing, I think, so there's all sorts of things we have to take into account. I've said too much. I withdraw everything I've said.
Right, I think we might go to the solids for the phones, actually. Can we go to the operator on the phones?
Yes, thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, on the telephone lines, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypads now. You will be advised when to ask your question. Thank you. Okay, it looks like we have no questions coming through on the telephone lines. So, Paul, I'll hand the call back to you.
Any last chance in the room? Yes, Oliver, last one.
Back at coming back to solvency. And Ogden. I see in the sensitivity on your solvencies that a 10-point rate reduction would reduce your solvency rate by about 14 points. So sort of that makes me think that implicitly you have a price expectation in your mind in reaction to Ogden, implicit in your solvency assumption. So I'm thinking if prices do go up, over the next 12, 18 months, does that help your rate? Does that help your solvency ratio?
Well, yeah. So every time we do a business plan, we take into account what we think will happen and the actions we're taking. And more profitable business, whether it be the same profit and more volume or more profit, same volume, is beneficial to your Solvency II capital position. So yes, that would be a plus. And you look at it on a sort of 18-month basis under Solvency II. You then have to project your balance sheet out to the end of that period and see what the risks you think will be there then. But yeah, it would be positive.
But then implicitly,
pound for pound, basically.
But implicitly, that means that you have an assumption in there about how much you can offset the ongoing effect of.
Well, we've had to work with that, and we haven't had a lot of time to do it. So there is some assumption in there, and it's quite an important assumption. So there's upside and possibly downside from that. So nice point.
But I mean, we work forward from our loss ratios. I mean, that's our guiding principle. It always has been. Very good. Listen, thank you very much indeed. The people who actually delivered this result, my kind of team are here, and we'd love to join you over coffee. Well, thank you very much for all of your questioning, and we'll see you next time. Thank you very much.